Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guest. And this evening, of course, our guest is Melody Cederstrom. Hi, Melody. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm doing just great. How about yourself?
Well, I tell you what, I'm doing fine, other than we've been talking about this meltdown of the economic system for a long time, and now that this has begun, why, of course, it's worrisome, it's frightening, and yet, of course, I think it's important. The people understand what's really going on, and they're not sort of caught up in the rhetoric. I had a friend of mine listening to Rush Limbaugh today, and he had an expert on there who was telling everybody, boy, this is a great time to buy stocks. You've really got to get the stock market. Great opportunity to buy now that the market's dropped a little bit. And then this evening, as I was listening to the news, why, suddenly that same message coming over from the NBC, oh, this is the time to get into the market. What do you think of that advice?
Well, I think it's probably the worst advice anybody could take. And you have to remember, too, after 9-1-1, Rush was one of many who encouraged people to go out and spend in order to keep America going. And we are finally seeing what all that spending has done to America. And you see a lot of interviews with Soros and Buffett, and I saw where, you know, they're talking about investing in the financials. And of course, they have to keep encouraging people. This is all a way to keep them from panicking even more than what they are right now. And we haven't seen, I don't think we've seen a real panic as yet.
No, I don't think we have either. In fact, we know that Soros and Buffett and these others are investing outside the country because they know what's going to happen. They know what's going to happen to the dollar, and they know the dollar is going to be effectively destroyed.
Yeah.
And going to lose half, two-thirds of its value in the process of impoverishing the American people. But certainly they're going right along with the establishment that's rewarded them so well for being part of it, and certainly trying to get suckers into the stock market at this time, whereas everybody should be getting, in my estimation, getting out and getting into some place where they can certainly protect their lifelong earnings, their life savings, which otherwise are going to be destroyed.
Even with Countrywide coming out today, in order to save them, they had to borrow over 11.5 billion dollars.
$1 billion.
Yep, $11 billion. And what's interesting, though, is at the same time, SEC filings show that the company's chairman made a $13 million profit last month selling their stock. So, you know, they don't care about anybody else. They're only there to protect themselves. They're only there to obtain as much wealth as possible. They just don't really care about anybody else. And if people think that they do, they're sadly mistaken.
There's a lot of talk today about a liquidity crisis. But of course, it's not a liquidity crisis, it's a solvency crisis. I mean, most of these great companies are insolvent, and they're all living on borrowed money.
Yeah.
Money that's been created out of nothing, and the world is awash with money, but suddenly people are beginning to panic and realize that maybe the end of our fiat money, world fiat money system is coming to an end, and they can see the same thing happen in America. That's happening in Zimbabwe today. We'll be right back with Melody. Well, for our listeners out there who don't know what's going on in Zimbabwe, and the government that we brought to power, Henry Kissinger, and demanded that the people elect Mugabe as their president. They'd already elected a man named Bishop Mezrawiya with a fair and vote, an honest vote. And, of course, the United States intervened and rigged the vote and got Mugabe in power. Mugabe was a lifelong communist, trained in communist China, and they put him in power. But Henry Kissinger promised the people of Rhodesia at that time that if things ever got out of hand and became lawless, why, America would come to their aid. They could depend on him because he was an honest man. He gave the word of the American people, we would never let things get out of hand. And today, in the Zimbabwe, the official inflation rate is about 100,000%. 100,000%. And of course, you know, I believe it takes about 200,000 Rhodesian dollars to buy one American dollar. It used to be three American dollars to buy one Rhodesian dollar. The people have been impoverished over there, and it's just one of the most terrible, terrible tragedies you've ever seen. And that was the end result of American policy. And of course, could the same thing happen here in Western countries? Could we destroy the value of our currency? Is that what this is really all about? Is that why Alan Greenspan has refused to suddenly regulate the hedge funds and the derivative market? Is that why Alan Greenspan encouraged people to buy these adjustable rate mortgages and encouraged mortgage brokers and lenders to lend to people who never should have been allowed to buy a home because they didn't have any money and they were incapable of paying a fair interest rate? And why, of course, we've been pouring out over 10% increase in currency every year for the last 4 years, and why the inflation rate's really running at 11%, and why, of course, they're not publishing the M3 rates. They say, oh, it's just too hard to get. No, they don't want the American people to know that they are doing everything they can to destroy the value of our currency. And it's not just America. Our friends at other central banks all throughout the world are doing the same thing. In some countries, are increasing the money in circulation 20 or 30 or even as much as 40% a year. And I'm sure you're acquainted with all those factors, you know, because our good friend Bob Chapman keeps talking about it.
Absolutely. And, it amazes me that they quit the M3 because the publishing, because most Americans can't follow it anyway.
Well, this is Arthur Stan. Melody was simply saying that, they stopped publishing the M3. What is it? Why, it tells us how much the money in circulation is really increasing, and it's what the Federal Reserve is doing to destroy the value of our currency. They've refused to print the M3. They're increasing the money supply about 11% a year, and the money in credit up to 14 or 15% a year. And another year or so, that will be our inflation rate. Other central banks throughout the world are increasing their currency 20% a year, 30% a year, 40% a year, and the whole world financial system is headed towards a total disaster. So certainly other countries are very, very concerned about what's going on, as well as the United States, aren't they?
Yes, they are, and they've been bailing out their markets over the time. I also see the Nikkei is down over 375 points, and the Hang Seng just a few minutes ago. The markets are really wild. It was down, I saw, considerably, but now it's only showing, the Hang Seng is showing 117 points down. So I'd have to assume it's a safe bet that the European markets will be falling again overnight, and our markets will open up again today. I mean, we were down 340 points today, and I guess there was a rumor going around that the Fed was in a special meeting, but it's always interesting as these rumors will always come out after the gold market closes. And so to see gold hit so hard today, and shortly thereafter the market turn around, it's so orchestrated and it's so simple to see anymore. And you have to remember that the main focus is the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is what's driving the price of gold. And when you have this unwinding of the yen carry trade, the dollar is basically the primary beneficiary of this. And so that's why we've seen a little bit of strength in the dollar recently. And again, then you see the pressure on gold. There's been discussions about the forced liquidation sales that were behind the gold's fall today, that people are liquidating in order to meet margin calls, and I'm not so sure I buy that. Usually you do have people run to gold as a safe haven, and I believe people really don't know right now that what is a safe haven, so maybe they are going to U.S. Treasuries right now instead of gold, but I think that will be short-lived.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to understand that our stock market is totally manipulated. The stock market was down almost 350 points at one point today, and then towards the end of the day, why the plunge protection team, the working of the group on what they call a working group on financial matters, a working group on financial matters, which is made up of people from the Treasury and the Fed and some of the certain stockbrokers and big banks, they moved into the market to manipulate it up because they don't want the people, the common people, to panic. And so they actually drove it up here in the last hour or so, and so it closed down. What did it close down today?
Like 14 or 15 points.
Right. But it's all manipulation.
Yes.
What did they do to gold today? Because I saw, last time I saw, it was about 640. Where did it end up?
It ended at 648. It was down 2090. And in the aftermarket, it was up almost $5. But currently, we're trading at about $1.20 at 650. So silver is coming back a little bit better. It was up 28 cents at 11.73 in the aftermarket.
But actually, because it lost $1.30 an ounce today. That's just unbelievable. Because, of course, there's a world shortage of silver, and it's all manipulated. When you understand it's all manipulated, and, of course, this is all an effort to play games with our minds, you know, then, of course, we begin to see that there is a hand behind everything that's going on. And, of course, it ties into these people of great wealth and tie into the certainly these organizations working behind the scenes who really, of course, are quite willing to sacrifice this country, our economy, and to bring about this world government. The only way, though, that you can have a world government, you have to have a world currency. How will you get a world currency? How will you get the American people to give up their dollar and their sovereignty? Well, you simply destroy the value of the currency. You impoverish the people. Yeah, they're out of jobs. And then you come along and say, no, you just be good little people and you go along with our program. And then things are going to be all right again, like they used to be. Don't you remember? Just trust us. And I'm afraid an awful lot of people are going to trust them without understanding the spiritual forces that energize these people.
You're absolutely correct. And what was interesting today is the calls that I had, usually when gold is down 5, 10, you know, 15, whatever, the numerous calls of people concerned, well, why is gold going down? Why is it going down? I didn't have that today. It was strange. It was more people were purchasing without even concerned. There wasn't any concern that gold dropped $20. And I found that kind of strange. No one asked why it was down. They just bought because they were buying for safety and security. And so I was just quite surprised by that.
Now, what would, say, gold liberties, you know, the 1 ounce liberty coins or liberty or double liberties be going for? Not just regular AU, none of this MS, you know, 64, 65, but just almost like junk double liberty coins.
You don't want those junk gold coins. Because they're opinion coins. The value is based on the person that you're selling them to. But, I mean, even I was selling a special on 61 $20 liberties for $720 today. I mean, that's only $35 above what a one-ounce gold eagle bullion coin would go for. So you can see that, you know, the real value an AU would fall probably about, you know, $10, $15 below that $61, $20 Liberty. So you're looking around. And I always encourage people to go ahead and get your coin certified from an AU to a 61, because you have a guarantee with that coin. You know, when you go to sell it to someone, they can't say this is not what it is. When you go to sell back that AU, what's going to happen is the person's going to say, well, I don't think that's an AU. That's an extra fine. And they're going to take off another $20 off your bid price. And what are you going to say to them? Well, I'm an expert in grading coins, and that's really an AU. But he's buying your coin, so therefore you're going to have to accept whatever he says that coin is.
How much does it cost to get a coin evaluated and actually certified?
It costs you maybe, it depends. It varies on the number that you get certified. It can be anywhere from, you know, $25 to $35 a coin. And that's usually the difference between an AU and a 61. You know, it's usually that $20, $25 range. So the value, you're really purchasing more value by getting a certified coin. And that's the key. And you could lose a lot. I mean, if you have a market that's falling like today, if somebody was selling back a coin that's not certified yesterday and it was received in the office today and gold dropped $20, and he's going to say, well, you know, this is an extra fine, and gold's down $20, you can't have him ship it back to you because you've already lost the $20. So you want something that there's no argument to it, and that's what the certified coins do for you. And the spreads between a 61, the low grades, and the spread between bullion gold, I mean, it's incredibly low. And usually that spread can be anywhere from 175 to 225 plus. So for a $33 or a $20 spread now, it's well worth the purchasing event.
All right, fine. Of course, basically, if you're just buying it for the gold value, do these coins go pretty close to bullion value or not?
Well, if you get into the mint date coins, and again, I sell coins based on the individual and the suitability of the coin to each person. But when you go into the semi-numismatics, they basically work in two markets. They work the bullion market, and they can also have an impact on the numismatic market because of the supply and demand. They don't make them anymore. There's a limited supply. So when demand picks up and the supply diminishes, the price is going to rise. So you're basically getting getting the advantage of two markets. The bullion price, because they're price close to the bullion price, plus the numismatic with the supply and demand. And that's why those coins are so popular. But again, as I always say, so many times in the past years, the wrong coins were sold to the wrong people for the wrong price. And it's not the coin that was bad, it was just, you know, it was just a bad misrepresentation of the coin to the people that were buying them.
All right, fine. Well, of course, is there any shortage of gold coins? Are there plenty of gold coins out there? Is there any shortage of, say, guardians or any specific gold coins today?
The market is... People don't understand the gold market is very thin, particularly in the coins. You know, bullion coins, you can order up as many 07 coins as you want. And the St. Gaudens and the Liberties and the $20 gold pieces, they're fairly available. Some of the $10 Indians are difficult to get. Some of the fractional pieces are difficult to get. And so if I had wanted to order 164 $10 Indians, it might be a little difficult. So the $20 coins are a little bit more available, but as you go down in fraction, it can be, you know, certain sections of the market could be difficult.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Melody Cederstrom. We're going to be talking about what's going on. If you have a question, don't hesitate to call 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I should mention that Melody does help to support Radio Liberty. Well, Melody, you go right on from there.
Well, we were talking about the shortage of the coins.
And right.
I don't think people understand that the market is very...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hardball with China, maybe they'll play hardball with us. And since they control a significant amount of American dollars, you see, if you look at the real basis of our currency, there are about $700 billion of currency in circulation with nothing behind it. It's all fiat money, but at least it's printed money, about $700 billion. The Japanese hold $800 to $900 billion in currency. They don't have it in dollar bills, admittedly, but they have the credits for that. And if they were to dump that on the market, it would double the amount of dollars out there suddenly. And, of course, we would have almost 100% inflation. People don't understand that we have a fiat money system which makes you extremely vulnerable to what other people want to do. And if we came under financial attack, they could destroy the value of our currency literally overnight. And the average American would wake up in the morning impoverished and their pension gone, the value of their savings gone, even the value of their T-bills would lose 50% literally overnight. It could. And most people have never seen what happens with a rampant inflation. And I think this is just around the corner. What do you think, Melody?
I think it is also. And you're right. It's awfully funny that all of a sudden these inferior products are coming from China. Well, we get a lot of products from other countries too, and I'm sure they're just as inferior as some of these Chinese products. I even read articles where Mexico sends us candy that has lead in it, and nothing is ever done about that. And I do believe that we are beholden to China anymore. That's why Paulson takes so many trips over to China, and they are in control. I mean, and I believe one day it is coming. I've already read where India is beginning to open factories or service centers here in the country, in Ohio, where China wants to distribute their automobiles through Chrysler. So it's they are buying out this country, and I think and I believe the only person that can truly help turn this around would be Ron Paul. And even if he could get in there and begin to turn things around, we still have difficult situations to face. And it won't be an easy road either way.
Well, of course, the thing is that other countries are beginning to come in here and certainly to buy up many of our major corporations. Some of the foreigners are going to come in and start opening up new steel production plants. Here, most of the American steel plants have closed down, but other people are going to come in and open up steel plants. Foreigners. Foreigners are coming in and buying up our corporations. They're buying up our infrastructure. They are organizing something called sovereign wealth funds. With all the dollars that we've been exporting, because we've been exporting our inflation into other countries, and they want to get rid of American dollars, so they're going to do the one thing they can do, not necessarily dump the dollars on the open market, but come in and start buying up America and buying up what little manufacturing there still remains here in America. And there is the potential under the current situation for us to lose another 40 million jobs, according to the Professor Sleeper. I think he's an economist at Princeton, who suddenly woke up to the fact that, we have 40 million more jobs that can be done just as well overseas as they can here at a third or a quarter of the price. And unfortunately, those jobs are going to leave the United States, and what will be left here for our people? Well, jobs working at Home Depot, and jobs working at Walmart, and other service jobs, and jobs working in nursing homes, emptying bedpans. But the good-paying jobs are leaving. And, of course, what's happening is certainly they're bringing in engineers from other countries because they'll work for half cost. They're bringing in computer technicians and experts from other countries because they'll work at half the price. And this is all part of a planned program laid out in the Earth Charter to basically redistribute the wealth of the world, our wealth. And if you doubt that, get a copy of the Earth Charter. It's up on the Internet. If not, you can get one from us. And understand, nothing is happening by accident. It's all planned by a group of very powerful and wealthy people who have a different vision of the world, who have a different spirituality. The Earth Charter lays it out. Equitable distribution of the wealth within nations and between nations. That's what it's all about. And most people are going to end up being totally impoverished before this is over. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom, and of course we'd be glad to take your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Melody, do you think the average individual understands that what's happening is really all planned and orchestrated long ago?
Certainly not to the degree in which you just explained, and I'm not so sure. I don't know when they will understand. I don't know if they will understand. They will be so impoverished that they will be they will follow anyone and do what anyone tells them to do because they won't have the ability to say no or to understand. And you know they've been the dumbing down is so that they are willfully ignorant and they. No, I don't think so. I think they'll just think it's part of, it's happening to them, it's happening to their neighbor, and it's happening to their sister or brother or aunt or uncle. And they will go along without ever... How many years in that program before they wake up, I don't know. But I think only a small percent will.
Well, at least let's hope that the people who listen to our programs and your programs and certainly Bob Chapman's programs will begin to understand that what is happening is not accidental. It's part of a long-range plan for the people who have a different vision of the world. And of course, there are so many things that are going on today. I mean, certainly within the last week, the European Central Banks, the American Central Bank, Japanese Central Bank, Australian Central Bank have flooded over $500 billion into the equity markets. In other words, they're doing everything they can to flood the world with money, hoping that if you just create money out of nothing and flood it into the economy, they can keep the economy from contracting. And that's the one thing they fear. $500 billion. And of course, you begin to understand this can have a tremendous inflationary force here in the United States. $64 billion went in. That's almost 10% of the entire money in circulation in the United States. And this was interjected over a period of just a couple of days. In Europe, it was even worse. Obviously, they're even much more concerned about the contracting of the economy in Europe. So the central bankers are working frantically to try to keep this fiat money system afloat, knowing full well that history records every similar system has eventually collapsed. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our special guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom. Melody, let's get out your telephone number, your website, and how people get in touch with you.
The telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Make sure you spell out the A-N-D. And we're working on getting that address a little shorter. So
I've been hoping you would, because you need something, something maybe discount or something.
We're working on discountgold.biz.
All right, fine. That sounds great.
But it's not working yet, so.
All right, fine. We got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hi, Stan. I've figured out how the average person can figure out what's going on.
All right. How can they figure out what's going on?
By listening to Limbaugh and figuring out whatever he says, you have to figure out what the opposite is. Because what he's pumping at us is nothing less than whatever the Rockefellers want us to think. And the CFR and all of them. And today it was buy stock. They had one of his seminar callers from San Francisco, and he called the seminar caller a liberal who's been trained to come out and oppose him. But the real seminar callers are trained by the CFR or whoever in his camp, and they call in and set up his topics for him. And this woman called, identifying herself as a broker in San Francisco, called in and says in a great cheery voice, "Now is a great time for the small investors, the little guys, all us out here in the hinterland, to go plunk our money down on Wall Street." And I'm going, what a joke. You know, Wall Street is nothing, the New York Stock Exchange and the others are nothing but a giant milking machine for the aristocracy to suck the life out of us. So that's all I want to say about that.
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And I think that you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that so much of what you hear on talk radio and even on many Internet radio programs is designed to control your reality. You're going to have to check everything that you hear. In fact, you double-check and triple-check everything I say. I don't want you to accept it. I want you to be sure that what we're telling you is true. I wouldn't, however, be doing what I'm doing. I don't get paid, $20 or $30 million a year for my time, as Rush Limbaugh does, and I don't get the speaking engagements for $100,000. I go out and talk for nothing if anybody wants to hear it. But we tell you what we think is going on, what we know is going on, because we've been studying it for 45 years. Rush Limbaugh is the finest conservative money can buy. He tells you what he's supposed to. He's a spokesman for the establishment, for the people of great wealth and the Council on Foreign Relations, these people who have a different vision of the world. And all you need to do is just call Rush Limbaugh and ask him about this move towards a one-world government, and of course, you'll find out he will immediately attack you and demonize you and call you a kook. Why? Because that's what he's paid to do. He's met with the people from the CFR and the Rockefellers and the other people who are globalists who hate America. But Rush has done, in many respects, I think, a good job, because he's brought many people from the far left to the middle of the road. And for that, we'll be eternally grateful to him. Well, our job is to take those people he's brought from the far left to the middle of the road, at least where they can think a little bit, and then tell them the rest of the truth. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, my telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And, of course, we begin to find out that jobs are getting a little harder to get. The unemployment rate's going up a little bit. They say it's gone up to about, maybe 4.6%. Of course, once again, they're lying. Of course, it's really up. About 8 or 9% unemployment. I mean, I talked to a gentleman who was telling me about a mortgage broker. A year ago, this mortgage broker was making great money. And now he's working at Home Depot, $10 an hour. I mean, here's a man who's making $50, $75, $100 an hour. And now, of course, he's making $10 an hour. The living standards for so many people are going down. I had an email recently from a gentleman who was telling me he had a very, very good job. And I think he has about 6 kids and married, 55 years old. Suddenly his very successful job disappeared. Now he's working 2 jobs and making half the pay that he was before, but at least he's able to continue supporting his family. But we're going to find more and more people, beginning to lose their jobs, and more and more of the companies are beginning to either move offshore or they're going to go bankrupt because they can no longer compete with the production from other countries. And that's part of what the whole job is all about, is lowering the wage levels and the living standards of the American people. So prepare, the tsunami, the financial tsunami is upon us. And, of course, the price of gasoline is coming down temporarily, but it's going back up again. And next time you go to the grocery store, remember what the government says. The inflation rate is 2%, and you look at the price of milk, and you look at the price of eggs, and you look at the price of meat, and you look at the price of cheese and cottage cheese, and then ask yourself, are you going to believe the government? Are you going to believe your lying eyes? Well, let's go to Jeannie, who's calling. Hi, Jeannie.
Hey, Dr. Stan.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm just dandy.
Hey, it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, I just got in a couple days ago.
Okay, I have a question or comment for our guest.
Well, you were talking about Rush Limbaugh and how he has made people from the far left really understand certain things, and they've come to the center. And I was one of those where I was a real radical environmentalist. And I came to the center, and then I graduated from his school because I listened to you, Dr. Stan. And I know there's many people like me that have done the same thing. And I know while you're traveling, especially on the airplane going to different places, is you talk one-on-one, and you bring your newsletters that you put out. And there's Christians I meet, like in the airport, just waiting for an airplane, and they're devoted fans of Rush Limbaugh. But then I start talking about, other things, and then I pass out your letter, and it gets them thinking. So I think the secret is one-on-one.
I'm sure you're absolutely right. We've got to reach people, and every person out there, listening audience, has to get the information. You have our permission to copy any of our newsletters, or, and just get them out, or copy our videotapes, or copy our audio tapes, anything we've made. Get it out into other people's hands, and then challenge them to look at what's going on. And I'm just so glad that you're back safe and sound, Jeannie.
Yeah, I have God protecting me. There's many times I thought I wouldn't get through what I was doing, but I certainly did. I know I always enjoy Melody when she's on. You know, I'm reading a fascinating book now. It's a very definitive history of Hitler and how he came into being and power and how he controlled the people. But I came across one fact which I thought was very interesting. Did you know that Hitler had three strikes, you're out, just like they have in the criminal justice system now? And I thought, wow, they're following the same parallel of the Hitler regime. So I'll show it to you when I go up there, Doctor.
I'll look forward to it. The other thing is, of course, Adolf Hitler had all the ministers talk about Romans 13 and why everybody had to obey the government. And we have a wonderful book written by Pastor Erwin Lutzer called Hitler's Cross. It goes into what happened to the church under Adolf Hitler and how Adolf Hitler used the Christian church in Germany and mobilized the ministers behind him, saying, well, after all, read Romans 13. I mean, the inference was that God had put him there. Well, the God that put him there is not the God we worship, that's for sure. Anyway, God bless you, Jeannie.
Okay.
Good to have you back.
Yeah, I'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jeannie.
All right, fine. Anyway, of course, Jeannie is...
It was interesting. I was just talking about that today with someone about Hitler and the Roman 13 and how the church was led, and the churches are very much like that today.
It's really such a shame when you look and see the support for George Bush and his... policies over there in the Middle East, and the idea that we're somehow involved in a just war by killing all those people over in Iraq and all the people in Afghanistan, and of course it's primarily the evangelical Christians who've been told by their leaders that somehow this is a just war because George Bush is a Christian, and after all he said God told him to do it, so it must be all right. And I mean, you wonder how these evangelical Christians really, I wonder if they ever get down on their knees and ask, are what we doing really right and just in our Lord's eyes? Okay, well, let's go to Madeline, who's calling right now. Hi, Madeline. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Oh, hi there. Yes, I was listening. And I'm just a single mom, and I have this, equity loan. I'm probably one of those people who have that loan that everyone says is bringing down the country.
It's an adjustable rate mortgage?
Yes.
Get out of it. There's any way you can and get into something fixed.
It's always been that my house was the big valuable piece of something that I had. And then due to divorce, and that house just kept going up in price, and it just seemed like, well, this is wonderful. And I kept borrowing.
Like a piggy banker.
Yes.
Refinance it?
Exactly. And, with the divorce, I had to, pay out. And then with fixing the house up, because it's an old one, but it's in a good location, and it just seemed like the house went up in value $100,000 every year, It was great. And now suddenly, they say it's worth so very much. But if what you say is true, then I've borrowed so much on it to fix it up and to live off of it that suddenly I'm kind of scared. I had some renters that, didn't pay, and I had some illness and divorce and whatnot. Suddenly, wondering what I should do.
The one thing you've got to get out of debt one way or another, even if it means getting rid of that house and getting a cheaper house or moving to another place, but you cannot be burdened with a lot of debt because, you know, if you've got to make those payments and you don't make the payments, you know what happens?
Yeah, they take the house.
That's right. And the foreclosure rate's up dramatically all over this area, all over the California, even in so many areas of the country. Melody, what would you say to Madeline?
Well, I would think, too, if you can sell the home, sell the home. But, you know, we do need a roof over our head.
Mm-hmm.
And with the mortgage, with the homing, the sales falling along with home prices, it's becoming more difficult to sell. If there's some way that you can refinance, at least get a fixed rate. I don't know what your financial situation is, if it's...
Well, it's not good recently just because I was... I had a major bike accident, so I was just able to... And I do a physical work, and I have just rented the place finally. When I'm working and when it's rented to good people who don't, you know, camp and not pay,
mm-hmm.
Then I'm doing fine. However, in this last year or so, that hasn't been the case. I did just refinance. And I'm looking at, you know, the amount of equity that the house has. You know, it was something like $300,000. Oh, that's a safety cushion. Now, if I look at it realistically as what you're saying about the value of the dollar and whatnot, then my house will be not worth that much at all, and it'll come closer to what I have already borrowed. And
well, just get out of debt.
Get out. Yeah.
You've got to get yourself on a sound financial basis.
Yep.
I can't give you any advice. I'm not a financial counselor. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that, you know, the age-old story is that when you get yourself into debt, and then we begin moving into a recession, and jobs are hard to come by, and people aren't paying their rents, this is when people are losing their homes, and they're losing them all over America. Now, fortunately, here in Santa Cruz, this is a very desirable place to live, so that the values have not fallen dramatically, although many places are increasingly hard to sell. But down the line, I think this is going to continue, and the longer it continues, why the lower the value of the homes you're going to get. So you start thinking defensively what you can do to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Oh, thank you so much.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I think there are a lot of people like Madeline out there.
Yeah.
And at least she's thinking, and hopefully she'll start making plans, and I can't tell her what to do, but you do not want to be in debt at this time of the business cycle.
No, and you would think that with people losing their homes that they would be looking for rental homes, but you still have to look that they won't have any jobs. So, you know, it's certainly a double edge everywhere, you know, because these people who can't afford their homes, they're going to be losing their jobs. Most likely one of the partner will, you know, either the husband or the wife will lose their jobs, so... they won't be able to pay for rent anyway. So, you're absolutely correct. You know, people need to get out of debt.
And if you can get out of debt and somehow have a roof over your head, if
mm-hmm.
not, you're going to have to rent. But I'll tell you, down the line, rent's going to have to come down too.
Yeah.
And because usually what happens is we have an inflationary spiral. And that's what they're doing now. On one hand, they're pumping all this money into the economy to try to keep it going. And they can do that for a couple of years, but then they're going to have two choices. Either to get runaway inflation and end up like things are in Zimbabwe today, or, of course, beginning to restrict the access to funding, and then, of course, more and more people out of their jobs. You can't repeal the economic laws of history. Same thing happened in ancient Greece. Happened in ancient Rome. It's happened time and again throughout history where people have, thought that they could repeal the economic laws and create artificial prosperity simply by printing money. And that's what they're doing today. Well, let's go to Rick, who's calling from Texas. Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Sam. I was going to ask your guest and also you, why is it when the treasuries go up, gold and silver goes down?
All right. Why is it when the treasuries go up, gold and silver goes down, as they are doing right now?
What was the question?
Why is it when treasuries go up, do gold and silver go down?
Well, it's just that they're just fixing the dollar rates and the credit. And so you'll see the dollar reflected on the adjustments of the rates.
Well, I think they're manipulating the price of gold and silver, don't you?
Pardon?
I think they're manipulating the price of gold and silver. In other words, there are people out there that ordinarily when the stock market goes down, gold and silver should go up. And now suddenly the stock market goes down, gold and silver go down. Why? Why, very, very simple. It's all being manipulated. It's all, they're playing games with your mind, Rick. Keep looking over your shoulder because they really are trying to get us confused. And they want to get us back in the stock market. They want us to think the good times are coming back again. I don't think they're coming back. God bless. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Good evening. I heard an interesting fact years ago regarding apartments and rentals. And an old gentleman who had had many of them said there was a formula traditionally used, and it was very simple. You take the monthly rent that you can get for a property, you multiply it 100 times, and that is its true economic value. If you will look around you today in your community and look at the want ads and see how much you can rent a house for, you can, even in expensive California, you can rent a house for $1,500 a month, $2,000 or $2,500 if it's fancy. You take that, multiply it by 100, you've got a house that's true value is $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, or maybe $300,000, way below what the inflated prices are.
All right, fine. I think it's a good point, well made. And the thing is that everything is inflated. You're absolutely correct. Anything else you want to say before we let you go, Herman?
No, just your comments. Thank you.
All right, fine. Thank you so very much. And I think that there has to be a relationship between what you can rent it for, what you can sell it for, and what you can sell that house that you can get $2,500 a month for. For $2.5 million, I think the people who are buying that house are paying way too much. Here in California, boy, things are way overpriced. And, there's the old adage of whatever goes up is eventually going to come down. And I believe that even though we're not talking about the law of gravity, I think we're talking about financial laws. The way that you create artificial prosperity with fiat money, why the day of reckoning will come. Well, Melody, why don't you just sort of wrap up this program with your thoughts?
Well, we have to remember it is all about the dollar, and gold is very much a big player in this. And it's interesting because since the past couple of weeks listening to the CNBCs and the Bloomberg, the word gold, it's been very quiet. I haven't seen any commentary. I haven't heard any commentary, significant commentary anyway, about gold. They've been very quiet on it. And it's just interesting today how they hit gold first, and as soon as the market closed, we see the turnaround in stocks. It is manipulated. Gold is still the canary in the mine, and they don't want people running to gold for safety. And eventually that will overturn their ability to manipulate the price of gold.
Hold that price there, right? Yeah, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Melody Cedars from Melody. I want you to get your telephone number and your web page out one more time. You know, this hour has just flown by.
Yes, it has.
But let's get your telephone number and web page out one more time.
It is 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And the current web page is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That's A-N-D, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. SilverTrading.net.
All right, it's got to change one of these days, but we'll let you know before.
I'm working on it.
All right, God bless. We'll
thank
talk
you.
To you. Bye-bye.
God bless.
All right, that was Melody. And of course, this is the time when I really want to remind you, I am not a financial consultant. I'm an amateur historian. I'm really a retired orthopedic surgeon, but I've been watching these things for 45 years, and boy, I've made a lot of mistakes, and I'd like to keep you from making the same sort of mistakes. One of the things I would suggest is we have a little pamphlet called The History of Money, and we think it's well worthwhile getting it. We have a talk called The Financial Tsunami, available on video or DVD, and then, of course, a syllabus goes with that that will help you to understand all of the various factors that come together as we move into a perfect financial storm. I was talking to my good friend John Leffler, who works with Jim Poplava, who is, of course, one of the smartest people in financial consulting here in the country, and they simply have a one of the people they're very close to who deals with people who are trying to get their money out of the country. And, of course, these are people who want to leave America. They've lost confidence in the way things are going. What John said was that this man, he's a lawyer who works with these people, has never had so many people with big bucks. We're talking about multi-millionaires, and they're all leaving America. Like the rats leaving the sinking ship, they know, of course, we're in real trouble. And this is unusual. I mean, he's been at this for a long time, and suddenly so many people are simply getting their money out of the country while they still can, because they know what's going to happen to the dollar. And most people have no idea. They could not imagine it happening here. And I would ask, if God is just, why wouldn't he bring his judgment on this country financially, as well as, of course, in many other terrible ways? Because this country has turned their back on God, has engaged in brutal wars throughout the entire world, has our troops stationed in 130 nations, has over 720 bases overseas, is still occupying Germany and Japan, certainly of all these years after the Second World War, and the same is true with South Korea. We have no intention of pulling our troops out of Iraq, and if you believe we're going to bring them home, why, you don't understand. We have a great book. It's called The Secret History of the American Empire by John Perkins. The Secret History of the American Empire. We carry his other book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We have a 4-tape set, Economic Hitman. You need to understand what's really going on, what the real world is, the world that Rush Limbaugh will never tell you about, the fact that there really are people that run the world, and of course they use assassins, and they use all sorts of force, and you run into a world leader who won't go along with the program, and why, of course, he will be removed from office one way or another. John Perkins was part of this whole process. You want to check on him? Go to the Google, type in John Perkins State Department Disinformation. State Department Disinformation, you'll go, of course, to the Senate. They've got a whole section at the U.S. State Department about John Perkins telling you he just is not telling the truth. Why are they so worried about John Perkins telling the American people about how we work for the NSA and our intelligence agencies, and how they tried to bribe him and kill him and threaten him to keep him quiet? Fascinating material. Confessions of an Economic Hitman, The Secret History of the American Empire. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Financial Tsunami, The History of Money. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and well, for this hour, we're going to have with us William Grigg. He was formerly chief editor of the New American Magazine, a co-editor of the New American Magazine, and today he's writing books and doing commentaries and doing a few radio programs, but we're fortunate to have him here with us this evening as we begin to analyze what's really going on behind the scenes. And let me suggest that very, very few people can really begin to put what's happening together in a coherent pattern, and I've always admired William's ability to begin to bring together all the dots connecting them so that anybody can see clearly what's taking place, because nothing as it appears to be, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. William, thank you so much for being with us again. What do you think the most important issue to talk about this evening will be?
Well, Dr. Stan, thanks so much for having me again. It's a pleasure to be with you, as always. I think that perhaps the most important subject we could discuss right now is the verdict that just came in, I think, within a couple of hours ago, of guilty concerning Jose Padilla, this former Chicago gangbanger who was convicted of providing material support for terrorism in general, but for no particular terror plot. And this is, of course, the fellow who was held as an enemy combatant for 5 years by the Bush administration and denied all kinds of due process rights, any kind of due process rights, not only the legal immunities and protections that we associate with the rights attendant to a fair trial, but also those rights having to do with the fundamental dignity and integrity of his physical person. He was denied any status of protection under the law once George W. Bush, back in July of 2002, I believe it was, proclaimed him an unlawful enemy combatant. That was the first time an American citizen had been designated an unlawful American, unlawful enemy combatant. And under that status, he really had no legal recourse of any kind. And the Bush administration, for 3 years, over 3 years, it was in November of 2005, if memory serves, they held him and they insisted that the president has the power and the authority unilaterally to designate a person, an unperson, for the purposes of the law by calling him an unlawful enemy combatant. This was going to the Supreme Court, and it was a challenge the Bush administration didn't think he could win, so they relented and took him out of this military brig that he was being held in I believe, Charleston, South Carolina, and remanded him to the custody of the criminal court system after insisting for 3 years that he was simply too dangerous, too big a security risk to do this. And he was put on trial in Miami on charges that had nothing to do with the original allegations against him.
I thought it was so interesting that they never once mentioned what they'd already tried and convicted him for in the court of public opinion, and that is wanted to explode a dirty bomb in America.
Yeah.
After convincing the entire American people by repeatedly making the claim, then they never once mentioned the trial. I wonder why.
That's exactly right. He was supposedly the key to this dirty bomb plot. He was supposedly going to set off a radiological bomb in Chicago or some other place. And this was the basis on which he was held incommunicado and tortured as well for a number of years as supposedly the linchpin of this conspiracy and a key intelligence source on Al-Qaeda. And none of that played any role in the criminal trial that just ended this evening with the conviction of Mr. Padilla and two others on unspecified charges, non-specific charges of providing material support to terrorism.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. William Grigg right here at Radio Liberty. Well, William, why don't you go right ahead? We'll be right ahead of the story.
Yes, the reason why he was transferred, Jose Padilla was transferred to the criminal court system once again, was because the Bush administration was concerned that it would lose a appeal to the Supreme Court having to do with the claim made by the administration that the president can unilaterally designate an American citizen an unlawful enemy combatant and have that person held incommunicado without recourse to any kind of due process or any kind of legal appeal. And that's a power that the Bush administration wants to preserve. It wants to preserve this claim that the president can do this, that he can order any of us locked up in perpetuity and treated any way that he and his advisors would see fit. And in order to preserve that, they permitted Jose Padilla to go into the criminal court system, but they had a problem. If he were to be tried on the charges that were publicized, as you said, having to do with the supposed plot to detonate a radiological device, then I believe the poverty of the case against Jose Padilla would have been made evident, and the fact that he had been locked up without any rationale that reasonable people would support would become obvious. And so they ginned up a case against him having to do with the apparent fact that he visited Afghanistan and had something to do long before September 11th with elements of the Taliban movement that were somehow attached to Al-Qaeda. And it's important to point out that at the time, the United States was not engaged in open hostilities with either the Taliban or with Al-Qaeda. And so you can't say that he was taking up arms against the United States. What the prosecutors were saying is that he had what you might call joint and several liability in as much as he had adhered to this group for the terrorist acts that were committed in third countries by elements of Al-Qaeda against people who were not citizens of the United States or who were not under the protective authority of the United States government.
But you see, the problem with this whole argument is the fact that the United States created Al-Qaeda during the Afghan War, and of course, it was created by a man named Abdullah Azzam, who had worked for the CIA all during the Afghan War. As Bin Laden, and the United States was actually the major funder for the Taliban, humanitarian aid for the Taliban, right up until September 11th.
Yes, and narcotics aid, too. They were paying the Taliban to suppress the heroin crop, the opium crop in Afghanistan, which, of course, is effulgently blooming right now.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is William Grigg, and certainly Mr. Padilla, probably not a very nice person in many respects. Certainly has been involved with gang activity, but then he converted to Islam and went off to live in an Islamic country, and he wanted to, of course, join in the battle against certain elements. I believe he was going to be fighting the Northern Alliance, was communist in Afghanistan, and that's why he was there at the Al-Qaeda training camp. In fact, I have even been told, and we have documentation on this, that when he came back in the United States, he was asked if he would simply work for the United States as an informant against the Muslims, infiltrate the Muslim organizations, and then act as a spy. He said he wouldn't do that. He would not spy on another Muslim. And so it was for that. It was for punishment, for failure, refusal to do what he was told to do, that he was put in prison and tortured for year after year after year. And that was certainly, then they got a confession out of him simply to stop the torture.
Well, there are a couple of points that need to be added to that, and that's a very good summation of some of the really important details that are almost entirely unknown to the public, and they're carefully omitted by most media accounts, and I'm glad that you underscored those points. The accusation that he had anything to do with a dirty bomb plot and that he was somehow a key element of the Al-Qaeda network was provided to the Bush administration, which I've taken to calling the Bush regime. I mean, there's no point in treating it as if we're dealing with a normal government here. That accusation was provided by three witnesses, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Abu Zubaydah, I believe. I can't really pronounce these names and do them justice. I believe Abu Zubaydah is the name of the other the other of the two who were identified as terrorists, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I think, by any definition, would be considered a terrorist. And the third was a hapless Ethiopian refugee who lived in England for most of the last decade or so by the name of Binyan Mohammed. All three of those individuals were tortured. The two of them were identified as terrorists. One of them is by, and once again, any definition, the terrorist, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He was waterboarded as part of his interrogation of Guantanamo. Waterboarding, of course, is simulated drowning, something that was perfected by the Imperial Japanese in World War II and used quite extensively by the Khmer Rouge. As a matter of fact, the Khmer Rouge communists considered waterboarding to be their most effective method of torture. But Binyan Mohammed was just some poor schlep who was caught up in some large canvas by bounty hunters and delivered into the hands of the CIA and taken to Morocco, where he underwent years of horrible torture, including the use of surgical scalpels to make small but very painful incisions all over his body, including in his genitals. And it was after he had been submitted, after he had been forced to submit to sexual mutilation, that he was willing to swear out an affidavit implicating this man he'd never heard of or never met, Jose Padilla, an American citizen, as a member of this Al-Qaeda network and this Al-Qaeda conspiracy. So the basis for accusing Jose Padilla of involvement in that plot was torture, including sexual mutilation of an innocent man. And that was being used to try to inflict leverage on Padilla to use him as an asset, as an informant, or I believe as a provocateur, somebody who might indeed carry out terrorist acts that would be blamed on Al-Qaeda or whoever the terrorist enemy du jour might be. It was because he refused to cooperate that he ended up being treated with such Soviet-style severity for year after year. Now, he was in a really interesting position here, Mr. Padilla, because he was psychologically and physically broken. According to psychologists who interviewed him and looked into his case, he was somebody who had developed learned helplessness. That's something that the military officials, the intelligence officials who were presiding over this entire case, said that they had to bring about. They had to bring about a situation of, and I'm quoting now from Vice Admiral Jacoby, Lowell E. Jacoby, who was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency back in 2003. They had to keep him isolated and away from legal counsel in order to create, quote, an atmosphere of dependency and trust between the subject and interrogator. Anything that threatens the perceived dependency and trust between the subject and interrogator directly threatens the value of interrogation as an intelligence-gathering tool. In other words, they wanted to break his will, make him completely dependent on his interrogator for everything, and at that point he would be considered valuable. And we're talking about an American citizen whose detention was the result of evidence suborned through torture being declared a person completely outside the protection of the law and held at the whim of the President of the United States for 3 years of military detention and then for 2 years after that during what has to be considered a perfect travesty of a criminal trial, the verdict of which was, I think, a foreordained conclusion because his defense didn't put up a defense. His defense attorney completely threw the case.
And because I suppose he was employed by the same government that had been inflicting the torture on him.
Exactly. You probably have never seen a television program called Deep Space Nine. It deals with a far-flung future conflict between humanity and a number of alien races, including a militaristic race called the Cardassians. The Cardassians were a totalitarian society. And in their so-called justice system, the purpose of a trial was not to determine guilt or innocence because the verdict was already a foregone conclusion. The state wouldn't waste its time and resources prosecuting the innocent. The fact that you have a trial, ipso facto, means that you're guilty. And so in this system, the purpose of a trial is to validate the wisdom of the state and to display its compassion and efficiency. And the purpose of a defense attorney in that system is merely to facilitate this process in part by providing his own on-camera. These trials were always, of course, show trials, broadcast planet-wide in this system. You know, on-camera, he would attest to the fairness of the system but also he would help the defendant understand the necessity of submitting to the will of the state and playing the role that had been scripted for him. That's how justice operated in this science fiction scenario. I contend that the same thing just happened with Jose Padilla, because his defense attorney did not mount a defense, and I don't doubt for a second that the jury knew, or at least suspected, that if they had acquitted Jose Padilla of the charges against him, that the Bush administration simply would have taken Jose Padilla and put him back in military confinement, because he had been designated an enemy combatant. And I think that the betting odds would have dictated that that appeal, if there would have been an appeal, would not have gotten to the Supreme Court before January 2009, after which time it would be a nullity one way or another. Either George W. Bush would be headed out of office, and his successor would be headed in, or George W. Bush would have proclaimed himself president for life, and the whole issue would be moot anyway. But that was a possibility that was broached not by any nut job conspiracy maven, but by the Christian Science Monitor in its coverage of the case yesterday. They actually went so far as to inquire, rhetorically, if the Bush administration would be so bold as to take Padilla into custody once again, in spite of his acquittal, and remand him once again to the custody of military authorities. I think that they are perfectly capable of doing such a thing. I really don't think that anything is beyond them at this point.
Well, I think that's a very frightening thing to surmise. But then when you read the Military Commission Act, when you read the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act, or when you read the recent Homeland Security and Presidential Directive and the National Security Presidential Directive, you realize, of course, George Bush today has given himself the ability to become a dictator in America indefinitely with no recourse from Congress and no possibility of a time limitation placed on that if the president, of course, deems there is some sort of a national or homeland security emergency. And no outcry from our Congress. Most people have never even heard of those directives. Incidentally, and if our listeners would like to get copies, we do have them. We'd be glad to provide them. And we'll be talking about that, I think, at our seminar, or certainly in one of our upcoming newsletters. Everything is in place for a dictatorship in America. People say that couldn't happen, but then why are they giving Halliburton, Dick Cheney's corporation, $385 million a year to either be prepared to or to build concentration camps in America? We're not sure which it is, but all you need to do is go to Google and Google in Halliburton, $385 million concentration camps. You can read all about it. Why are they doing that unless they're really planning on having concentration camps? And anybody who doubts that, we have an interview with Congressman Henry Gonzalez, many years the chairman of the House Banking Committee, where he says, and you could actually hear him if you'd like to on a little film clip we have, he said there really is a plan in case of a national emergency to suspend the Constitution and arrest Americans and put them in concentration camps. I mean, Henry Gonzalez ought to know. He was privy to all the things going on in Congress for many years.
Mm-hmm. He was somebody who really bird-dogged, among other things, the BCCI scandal, the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, which is this very shadowy international slush fund that was sort of the banker of first resort for intelligence agencies and terrorist networks and crime syndicates, or do I repeat myself twice? And it was connected to both the Bush family and the Clinton family. It's really interesting. There's a fellow by the name of Stevens. I'm trying to remember his first name, who was connected to BCCI, who was the biggest single donor to both Bush the elder and Clinton back in 1992. That gives you an idea of how incestuous this whole system is. But Henry Gonzalez had kept track of that, and I wish he were still in Congress, because he tended to unearth some very fascinating things on that subject.
He says he did. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. William Grigg. Ladies and gentlemen, freedom is lost when good people are not involved. What are you doing? What are you doing to try to preserve America today? What William, go right ahead there.
You brought up a couple of interesting points that I think need further fleshing out with respect to the vulnerability of American citizens right now to be arbitrarily imprisoned as suspected terrorists or political dissidents of various types. One question I always ask people when we're discussing this special purpose construction concession that was given to Halliburton to build these, whether you call them relocation centers or detention camps, to build these facilities for holding large numbers of people. I always point out that Halliburton had a contract during the Clinton administration to build very similar facilities in Cuba, ostensibly to hold Haitian refugees in the event that Haiti were to go critical, and you had this huge exodus of Haitians who would be heading to Florida. There was going to be some need to hold them, and some facility would be, have to be created for that purpose. And Halliburton built that facility, and is now, of course, the Camp X-Ray facility at Guantanamo, which is the detention center and torture center of the Bush regime in its open-ended war on terror. Gitmo really is sort of the crucible where they're developing a lot of the policies that are being retrofitted into our legal system here in the United States. But the point is, what kind of a government would build empty detention centers? Seems to me that the obvious answer is a government that intends to fill them. They're not going to sit there and let them remain empty. And I don't know if you happen to have heard this particular observation, Dr. Stan, but on the day that the amnesty bill was voted down in the Senate for the last time, it was a Monday back in June, Michael Savage, who is one of the most widely listened to talk show hosts in the business, and probably the most outspoken on the issue of illegal immigration, was joyous. He was waxing rhapsodic about this accomplishment. And I might have mentioned this to you before, but he disgorged something that I thought was really sort of interesting when he was talking about his daily constitutional, the walk that he would take every day. It would take him by a facility that was the local branch office of the Department of Homeland Security. And I'm paraphrasing what Michael Savage had to say. And he talked about the fact that in the parking lot, it's a rather large parking lot outside this particular branch office of the Department of Homeland Security, he could see row after row after row of buses. They were all painted black, and they had blacked-out windows. And what Michael Savage was saying is that these buses, obviously, are sitting there just waiting to be sent out to gather up all the illegal immigrants and send them out of the country. And I heard that, and I chuckled to myself, and I said, do you want to bet? That's not what they're being built for. That's not what they're going to be used for. And it's the same thing with these camps. They're not being built for the purpose of detaining illegal immigrants. Now, granted, they may be put to that purpose initially, or they might be put to that purpose in addition to other things. But given what we're seeing right now in terms of the trend line and in terms of what's happening with the legal environment in our country, we can't assume that all of these things will be deployed against them exclusively. They're being created for us as well. You go back and take a look at that hideous executive order that was issued on July 17th by George W. Bush, in which he set out what he is pleased to call a legal basis for expropriating the funds of anybody deemed to be interfering with the reconstruction of Iraq, having any material connection with or alleged material connection with an effort to undermine the so-called reconstruction of Iraq.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William Greig is our guest this evening, and certainly William is talking about the fact that the Office of Homeland Security, it must be in San Francisco, but Michael Savage was talking about walking past their headquarters, and he sees row after row after row of buses with the windows all blacked out, black painted buses, windows blacked out. And, of course, Michael thinks it's going to be used to pick up all the illegal aliens to take them home. Well, let me tell you, the president said we cannot round up all these illegal aliens and send them home. And if that's true, then why do they have all these buses sitting there with the windows painted black and the buses painted black? Do they have plans to round up American citizens? And I will tell you, I'm sure they do. In fact, we played a clip on one of my programs earlier today that suggests that they have actually notified ministers all across America that in case of civil unrest here in the United States, they are to tell their parishioners about Romans 13. That is the duty of every Christian to obey their leaders because, well, Romans 13 said, we are to obey the leaders no matter what they do, whether we agree with them or not. God put them in charge. So like the president claims that he talks to God regularly and he's getting advice from him on what to do. And that's what they're advising ministers. Could it possibly be that they're planning on civil unrest in America?
Well, it doesn't really take a Nostradamus to anticipate what's going to happen when, rather than if, we suffer a severe economic contraction, because we're already getting, if you will, the Braxton Hicks of major contractions to come. Braxton Hicks, of course, are small little twinges that an expectant mother will feel just before the major contractions ensue. As the father of five young children, I became somewhat familiar, albeit secondhand, with what Braxton Hicks and contractions are like. So really what's happening right now with the complete shutdown of the market in bond issues based on subprime mortgages and the effects that's having on the markets, and also the terrifying things we're hearing about some of the major mortgage lenders, countrywide being the most recent, being the nation's largest, now facing the prospect of insolvency. This all happening just weeks after the housing secretary was in Beijing begging the Chinese to start buying up our bad paper, the bonds and securities issued on the basis of these subprime mortgages. All this stuff portends some really ugly things to come in the economy. Last week you had the Federal Reserve pump at least $62 billion of liquidity into the markets, just ex nihilo, $62 billion, literally out of the ether by the click of a mouse. And we're all going to end up paying taxes on that, because at some point that inflation is going to work its way into the pricing system. It's already happening. You can actually see in the headlines now where people are amazed that the price of their staples keep going up in spite of the fact that the government says inflation is stable. Well, it costs a little bit more every time I go to the grocery store. Get used to that. That's going to happen. It's going to happen much more poignantly and mordantly over the next couple of months. It's only going to get worse. But as these things happen, as the toll of government profligacy starts to be felt directly by consumers, there's going to be a lot of discontent. You see, the job market is not really all that auspicious right now. People are now finding it difficult, even those who are in a stable situation with respect to their mortgage, and there are 7 to 14 million Americans who are going to lose their homes over the next couple of years as the subprime market unwinds. But even those who are not facing that type of a prospect are going to find it more and more difficult to cover their expenses. The bite's going to be deeper. It's going to be bloodier. People are going to get angrier, particularly, of course, when we see people start to lose their jobs. That started happening in Detroit a year ago, and it's not getting any better there. Actually, a year and a half or so ago, the U.S. Automobile industry started to feel the effects of, you know, decades of accumulated mismanagement. And that it had an impact on the housing market. It starts to play off itself that way. It starts to exponentiate. But you already have really the raw material for some real nastiness as the economy starts to contract and worsen. You have cultivated antagonisms between ethnic groups. I mean, that's one of the things that's going to happen as a result of the whole crisis provoked by the immigration debate. You're going to have people at each other's throats over the concept that people are coming into our country and stealing jobs and throwing Americans out of work. We already see that happening.
In fact, I really think that they've been encouraging this.
Oh, they've embedded that shamelessly. Oh, yeah, no doubt. That's something that they have been trying to engender for decades. I mean, since the late 1960s with Corky Gonzalez and people of that ilk. And in the 1990s, they really got a whole-scale injection of that starting about 1993, 1994.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. My guest is William Greig. Go right ahead, William. Yeah.
It's okay. We're talking about the way that the powers that be have been gleefully abetting friction and tension over the issue of illegal immigration, and how they probably have been seeding, at least this is the direction I wanted to take, the remarks that we've made before the break, how they've been seeding using foundation grants and other resources, probably both sides of this issue, with some really nasty characters who are play-acting for the purpose of abetting and provoking hostility between native-born Americans or naturalized Americans and people here who are recent immigrants or illegal immigrants and so forth. And really there is a sort of subtle but unmistakable Bosnia type of a vibe that you get from this. You know, Bosnia became the buzzword, the proverb for a multi-ethnic, multi-religious Habesian civil war, where you had at least three sides who were fighting each other in not constantly, but sometimes shifting constellations. But they simply couldn't get along. They couldn't share the same space together, and so things got so bad that the only way that this society could keep from disintegrating into outright omnivorous genocidal warfare was to have the United Nations intervene and keep these people apart by brute force, by armed occupation. It's ironic. Warren Christopher, the Bela Lugosi lookalike, who was Bill Clinton's Secretary of State back in the mid-1990s, after he had spent a couple of years ruining the Los Angeles Police Department, among other gifts to humanity, he decamped in Bosnia in late 1995 as if those poor people hadn't suffered enough. And one of the things he said after he got off the airplane was that Bosnia was the model multicultural society. And only somebody whose ears are utterly deaf to the music of irony could utter that phrase without thinking it was a punchline of some perverted sort, because they were so successful at being multicultural, the only thing that kept them from killing each other was armed intervention by the United Nations. And if we, God forbid, may God forever forbid this from happening, but if we were to see our country start to fracture along ethnic lines of that sort, we would make Bosnia look like a slap fight. And I think that there are certain people that want to bring that about, and that terrifies me. But that could lend itself quite well to the scenario we're discussing about how, in order to save what's left of public order and productive, peaceful commerce and so forth, the government would simply have to start rounding up the worst elements.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Greig, and certainly William is saying what I have felt so for such a long period of time, that they really want ethnic strife in America. And this is one reason they've encouraged the Hispanics to come here. And they want the Hispanics and the blacks and there's the whites and the Muslims all at one another's throat. And, and of course, to create racial animosities and hatreds there. I mean, after all, if you've got all these various groups, multilingual, multicultural societies, you can play them against one another. That is what tyrants love to do, and that is why we've been actively encouraging people from the Muslim countries to come here and encouraging illegal immigration. Of course, now they call it migration, but it is illegal immigration, not immigration and not migration. It is illegal immigration, and of course they can get the animosity between black and Hispanic. They've accomplished exactly what they want when you understand that this is part, in my estimation, and I think I can speak for William as well, he can see this so well. This is how you create the chaos and the crisis for which the new society comes.
Sure. I mean, the idea is that you need some kind of friction that will be the spark that will lead to the Holocaust, if you will, the heat from which will fuse society and mold it nearer to the heart's desire, assuming that the word heart applies to the type of people who preside over this process. I'm not sure that they have the functional equivalent of a human heart here. It's interesting how so often in our history there have been efforts, and unfortunately, there have been successful efforts on a scale much larger than we're comfortable admitting, perhaps, there have been efforts to set people off on the basis of race and ethnicity. And for all of the problems that America has had, we really have been better off than any other multi-ethnic society in history, in large measure because until recently, and by recently I mean the last few decades, our government has not been the all-encompassing, all-powerful presence that it has been in previous multi-ethnic or multi-religious societies. One of the things that that happens when you have a multi-ethnic society is that minorities want to make themselves clients of the state on the assumption that only by seeking the protective embrace of the state can they be safe from the majorities. That's what's happened in a lot of countries. If you take a look at the history of, or if you take a look at Iraq right now, you don't have to look at history, just take a look at Iraq right now, where the Sunnis, who are allied with Saudi Arabia, and many of whom are at least sympathetic with elements that are allied to Al-Qaeda, are now becoming the preferred client of Washington. That takes us back, by the way, to the case of Jose Padilla, who was just convicted of providing material support for terrorism. The Bush administration right now is ladling out hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia gives some of that money and some of the weapons that it is buying from Washington to the insurgents in Iraq that are allied with Al-Qaeda, that are killing American soldiers in Iraq. You know, the Bush administration, in other words, is directly providing monumental amounts of material support for terrorism. And one of the reasons why this works the way it does, once again, is because the Sunnis, being a minority in Iraq, don't want to be ruled by the majority Shiites, who were thrust to power by the invasion of 2003, which overthrew the minority Sunni regime. it's just insanity cubed. And you can take another example of this in Rwanda in 1994. I mean, for decades, the Belgian colonialists had played off two different groups of Christian ethnic minorities. Well, actually, one was a majority, one was a minority, the Hutus and the Tutsis. And historically, the Hutus and Tutsis had gotten along fine until the colonialists showed up and decided that they would favor one of these ethnic groups over the other, and that set up decades of intercommunal warfare in Rwanda. In 1963, it almost led to genocide, and in 1994, it did lead to genocide. 1 million people killed in about, what was it, a 78-day bloodletting, most of it carried out by machetes, right under the nose of the UN peacekeepers who were supposedly there to protect the Tutsis, but actually helped facilitate the genocide by disarming the Tutsis and leaving them at the mercy of the Hutu-dominated government. What a wonderful idea that was. But America, and may God be praised for it, has avoided large-scale, horrific, genocidal ethnic conflicts of that sort. That's not to say that our history is barren of such tragedies. Talk to an American Indian sometime if you think otherwise. I mean, they've been on the receiving end of a lot of that kind of nonsense, all of it once again abetted by government. But to the extent the government has been kept on some kind of a leash, America has been preserved, protected from that type of horrific, monumental, mega casualty style ethnic cleansing. But what we're seeing right now is that everybody wants to be a client of Washington. Everybody wants to find some kind of a hyphenate to describe himself, to categorize himself as a victim group or some other type of client group of the federal government. And if, as I suspect we're about to see, the economy goes belly up and hard times descend on our country, I don't know that we still have the moral character or the basic integrity to avoid the obvious solution, which is to look to government and to play on our identities, our self-defined identities. You know, this whole nasty game of identity politics will take on, I think, a very lethal aspect, and it will be the bloody consequences of identity politics that right now just consists of calling each other names for the most part or filing lawsuits. That will turn lethal, and I think that might be one of the things that will be used as a pretext to bring about full-scale authoritarian government in our country. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I desperately hope I'm wrong.
Well, I fear that you really are not, because your thoughts, even though we've never talked about it, are very, very similar to mine. And we've even created new words like Islamofascist.
Sure.
I mean, who had created this word? Why is it being used so frequently? Why to get us to hate people who are Muslims?
Mm-hmm.
Those people over in the Near East and the Middle East, but those people right here in America who want to kill us, and we better kill them before they kill us. Isn't that the way the game is played? And they're conditioning a lot of Americans to feel that way. And then, of course, they're even working, financing it, because this whole radical Islamic movement is being funded by our good friends. The Saudis are being funded by the United States, and we're letting them come in and have their radical imams in our mosques in America go into our prisons, where, of course, if you convert to the Muslim faith, you get all sorts of special privileges not available to the regular prison population, and they're using our prisons as recruiting grounds for radical Islam. Why would any logical nation allow that to happen, unless, of course, there was another agenda? I agree with you totally.
Well, Jose Padilla is a really good example of that process, because he was somebody who was a very small caliber street thug in Chicago. I think the only specialized training he ever received was in the mysteries of running the grill at Taco Bell. And he went to prison on gang-related charges. While in prison, he was converted to Islam for probably the reasons you're describing. I mean, there are certain privileges that attend conversion in prison, and there's a certain cachet, and you find an identity. That, by the way, is sort of the same process I'm talking about. If you go to prison, you need to have an identity of some sort for protection. That's why there are so many gangs that tend to thrive and proliferate in prison environments where the black inmates have their own group, and the Aryans have a group, and often the Aryans and the Hispanic gangs are at daggers drawn with each other. And Jose Padilla ended up becoming a Muslim. But when you talk about the way that people are trying to cultivate hate toward Muslims, as if we wouldn't have problems with Muslims already. I mean, we're already going to have problems with Islam. That much is a given. But, you know, why just leave things as they are when you can go out and borrow more trouble? I think the term Islamofascism was coined by David Horowitz, who's the retread communist who sort of appointed himself the Grand Cultural Inquisitor. And if you want a really good example of people seeking to abet genocidal hatred, literally genocidal hatred, there was an essay published by a fellow by the name of Philip Atkinson, who writes for the Family Security Foundation. It was published on August the 3rd. The Family Security Foundation is a front group for the Center for Security Policy, which is a major neocon think tank in Washington, D.C. Many of its officials, its fellows, and board members have ended up in the Bush administration, people like Elliot Abrams and Douglas Faith, and even Dick Cheney, Vice President Cheney, was with the Center for Security Policy. So this is not an obscure group. Once again, Family Security Foundation is a front group of the Center for Security Policy. Philip Atkinson, in this essay published on the 3rd of August, wrote, among other things, the wisest course in Iraq would have been for President Bush to use his nuclear weapons to slaughter Iraqis until they complied with his demands or until they were all dead. Then there would be little risk or expense and no American army would be left exposed. And then later on, in the same essay, he goes on to explain, Mr. Atkinson, the simple truth is that modern weapons now mean a nation must practice genocide or commit suicide. Now, this is somebody who's writing for a group that is, in terms of organizational flowcharts, a stone's throw away from the White House. Further on in the essay, Mr. Atkinson commends the example of Caesar pacifying Gaul by mass slaughter. He divided into three parts and set the tribes off against each other, slaughtered the Gauls. On the basis of this victory, he rallied the army to his side. He crossed the Rubicon and proclaimed himself. Well, actually, he didn't proclaim himself. He thrice refused the crown, and amid, as Shakespeare depicts in his play, amid these agonies of feigned reluctance, accepted the will of the people to be made emperor. You know, this is something he didn't want to do, but the people demanded it. And that's the example that Atkinson is committing to President Bush. And he writes as follows: if President Bush copied Julius Caesar by ordering his army to empty Iraq of Arabs and repopulate the country with Americans, he would achieve immediate results. Popularity with the military, enrichment of America by converting an Arabian Iraq into an American Iraq, and boost American prestige while terrifying American enemies. He could then follow Caesar's example and use his newfound popularity with the military to wield military power to become the first permanent president of America and end the civil chaos caused by the continually squabbling Congress and out-of-control Supreme Court. This guy, once again, is writing for a group that is attached to one of the main think tanks helping to create the Bush administration's agenda. He's calling for nuclear genocide and literal fascism. That's the type of mindset we're dealing with right now. That's where the plumb line falls in political terms right now.
Well, you know, this is so foreign to the thinking of the average American, and yet I have no question at all. It really is true. And, of course, these people you're talking about, they all tie into these elite groups that have a different world vision because they really do not value human life. Of course, you see the same people who now, of course, are increasingly vocal in their demand that we go to war with Iran and then with the rest of the Muslim world, and we've got to get those Muslims before they get us. And what's the solution? We have 1.2 billion Muslims in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What's the solution? I mean, how are we going to get there before they get us? Or we're going to have to kill them.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen out there in the listening audience, understand that there really are people in Washington, D.C., in key positions who want us to go to war with Iran. They may very well be planning on plunging us into war within a few months. And, of course, then what happens if the Iranians strike back at us and we're to sink one of our aircraft carriers? Well, we're talking about a six-day war. It could, of course, end up extending into a 60-year war,
sure.
A war that will never end.
Well, I think that really, and this is something that may seem completely bizarre to say, I think the only reason we haven't gone to war with Iran yet is the relative moderation and prudence of the regime in Tehran, not any concomitant qualities being displayed by the regime in Washington. And the regime in Iran is a horrible regime. I mean, it's ruled essentially by this thick, greasy cast of really unpleasant mullahs. They're the ones who really set the policy for the government of Iran. It does have a parliamentary, democratically elected form of government. Women have the franchise in Iran, and so to that extent, it could be considered modern. That's in large measure a legacy of the Shah, but you have an overlay of radical Shiite Islam and then elements of Leninist revolutionary dogma that are infused into that mix as well. So it's a pretty horrible government. Even so, it has been, I think, more moderate and responsible in dealing with this confrontation with Washington than Washington has. It seems to me that there have been several provocations that have been made by Washington, and Iran, for reasons that I think are pretty clear to rational people, has refused to bite on the bait because they don't want a war with the United States.
Well, I think there are people in the United States that want a war with Iran, and because they're saying, oh, it's only going to be a little six-day war. A little six-day war, you know, our boys will be home in a few days, and anybody who believes that has never studied history.
I think what happened in August of 1914 when you had these people from several countries going out of their way to exacerbate a diplomatic crisis that could have been relieved by a couple of phone calls. I mean, at one point, Kaiser Wilhelm had literally ripped the phone out of the wall so he wouldn't be able to conduct diplomacy with, if I remember correctly, with France and the Russians at the time. And when the Germans got on the trains to go to the front, you know, to carry out the Schlieffen Plan, and go through Belgium and cut off the French, they were chanting, "We're on an excursion to Paris. I'll see you on the boulevard," and the idea was that they would be home by November. That was in 1914. You know, the war that basically killed Christendom. World War I was the murder suicide of the Christian West. We're still dealing with the radiating consequences of that war, which is brought about by these amoral people, these plotters, power hungry people you're talking about. best description I ever read was provided by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the one who wrote the Sherlock Holmes books, the Sherlock Holmes stories. He lost a son in that war. He referred to the architects of that war as the highborn conspirators against the peace of the world. That's the best description I've ever heard of the people we're fighting.
But, of course, the real reason, in my estimation, was they wanted a world government. They said this is the war to end all wars. That was the slogan. The war to end all wars. The war to make the world safer, democracy. Gee, doesn't that sound like why we're over in Iraq and Afghanistan today?
Yes.
To make those Islamic countries safe for democracy. Well, the more things change, the more they remain the same. Our guest has been William Grigg. When we get back here, we're going to get William to give out his telephone number so you can get to his website and get his information. Well, William, could you get out your website and, of course, see how can people get your information?
Very well. The best way to get my writings is to go to The Right Source, which is an online news portal which has news and commentary and also access to the blog and the news magazine that I do online, both of which are called Pro Libertate, which is Latin. The phrase is translated as for freedom. www.rightsourceonline.com is the web address. Once again, it's rightsourceonline.com. Not the right source, but merely rightsourceonline, one word, .com. That'll take you to my blog. If you go to the front page, for lack of a better way of describing it, you scroll down, look at the left-hand side of the screen, and you'll see a photograph of myself. There'll be two links connected to that photograph. One is to the e-zine and the other is to the blog. The blog is updated three or four times or more every week, and the e-zine rather less frequently than that. But that's the best way to find what I write. I'm going through the final galley proofs of my book, Liberty in Eclipse, The Rise of the Homeland Security State. Hopefully that'll be available, I'm thinking early September, and I'll give you details as to how to get that. It's a much larger book than I expected it to be. It's 292 pages, just the text of the chapters. That doesn't include the index of the or the endnotes. But that should be available fairly soon. I'm thinking probably the beginning of September. It'll be a little more than 300 pages, and hopefully it'll be a very easy to read 300 pages. And I'm getting some very good preview notices from some people who are very active in the freedom movement who are saying some very generous things about it.
Well, of course, we'll do everything we can to help you get that put out. Of course, I think it's so vitally important that people have access to your information, and I think, of course, you're concerned about Jose Padilla. I mean, I don't think he's a very likable individual, but I think this is a blemish on the history of America. And when you realize that this man was offered an opportunity, if he'd just become an informant for our own government, why, of course, that they would let him off, and when he didn't do it, well, you see what's happened to him, and he'll probably spend the rest of his life in prison. And, of course, he's been destroyed psychologically. The psychiatrists who've seen him have said that they've destroyed his personality.
Mm-hmm.
They've destroyed the very essence of who he is. What sort of human beings would do that? Well, I'd like to suggest that the human beings in positions of power in Washington, D.C. today, who are determined to plunge us into a war with Iran and with the whole Muslim world. We'll be back in just one moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William, one more time, let's get out your website and how people can get your information.
Go to rightsourceonline.com. That'll take you to the blog, Pro Libertate. It has links to Kevin Shannon's radio show, Right Source Radio, and it also will be the source you can go to get ordering information for my new book, Liberty in Eclipse, The Rise of the Homeland Security State.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate so much of being with us, and hope we can get again next week. Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, I hope you've enjoyed our guest this evening, William Grigg. Fascinating source of information, and we have a real problem in America today. because we have people in positions of power who do not have a moral compass, who look at the world differently than you and I do. I mean, certainly we have people in positions who come from the Skull and Bone Society. This is a Luciferian organization. If you doubt that, I suggest you go to WilliamHKennedy.com, www.WilliamHKennedy.com, and there you can see in living color videos which were filmed surreptitiously of the initiation ceremony of Skull and Bones. Do you think it was just simply a quirk, an accident, that both presidents or candidates who ran for the presidency in 2004 came from the secret, from the same Luciferian society, Skull and Bones? If you need to know more about Skull and Bones, we have a four-tape set on that organization. We certainly have a number of books on that, Secrets of the Tomb, the fleshing out of Skull and Bones. We have the membership list that actually came from Skull and Bones, which no one is to have. And then, of course, as you know, the president belongs to the Bohemian Grove, where they worship the owl. If you have never yet seen the video, the Secret Mysteries of the Bohemian Grove, we carry that. Alex Jones, excellent video. We think it's must watching. We, of course, we have the four tape set on Skull and Bones, and we have the pages from their secret publication. It doesn't show very much, shows a picture of the owl, with the idea that inferring that they, and I forgot the exact wording, but that they worship the owl. Do we want a president who worships an owl, or who adorates, I think the term is, he adorate the owl? This is the symbol of Moloch, a 40-foot symbol of Moloch, where every year they do their symbolic sacrifice, their symbolic human sacrifice. I'm not suggesting it's a real human sacrifice, but we have to question the people who are there. In fact, even Richard Nixon in the White House tapes talked about how he disliked these people because they were always running around naked and so immoral. But he went to their meetings because they're at the Bohemian Grove because he wanted to be associated with the people who run our nation. Well, to understand the spiritual significance of what's going on, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our new talk, The Forbidden Secret, which comes with a syllabus, and will introduce you to the other dimension. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really is another dimension out there. And until you understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being carried out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, you can't understand anything going on. You need to get our four-tape set, The Secret, Behind the Secret, or four-tape or four-CD. You need to get, of course, the video. I should say the DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. You need to get the DVD, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. We have so much information. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, because we really are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.